Welcome back to the Build Your First BI Solution with SQL Server 2008 R2 training course. In this presentation, Peter Myers is going to drill down on how to load fact and dimension tables in a data warehouse or a data mart schema using SQL Server 2008 R2 integration services.
Thanks, Roger. So this is the fourth presentation in this module and very much rounds off the theory that's been presented in the prior three. It's all about how do we then adapt or use integration services to produce ETL solutions, i.e. loading fact tables and dimension tables. So the first topic here is about orchestrating the ETL process. We consider it very much a best practice that we have a single package that is going to perform all of the ETL. And that sounds somewhat ambitious, but really what we're saying there is that there should be a package that orchestrates this. So I'd expect to see in this package a host of execute package tasks that relate to the individual packages that have that one-to-one relationship with each table in my target schema. So effectively, we go ahead and we execute the dimension packages first. On success of that, we're then in a position to use the execute package task to start loading the fact tables. We typically automate the execution of this package using something like the SQL Server agent. And in fact, there's a job step type that will execute packages directly. And a robust design, would be remiss to say, is also going to include extensive logging. So that if we've got to troubleshoot or audit what the package has done, we have tables of information. In fact, I see even ETL processes around statistics for other ETL processes. Mm-hmm. There is so much data, but highly relevant to allow you to monitor and manage what your ETL systems are doing. So a review here on populating dimension tables. So essentially you have this process in many situations of taking the source data and the existing data you have in the dimension table and performing this correlation. And you do an outer join. Typically what doesn't match from the source system side must be a new record that needs to be inserted. What do you do with what matches? Well, it depends on the business rules that you have. And often the case is that we need to ensure that we update or synchronize the data in the dimension, and in certain situations we need to ensure we keep historical perspective and accuracy by keeping versions of this data. So this introduces a concept that Rolf Kimball has termed the slowly changing dimension, and he's categorized types 1 and 2 in particular that are very popular today.
And so I'm just going to say, developers, don't be scared. This is just a really fancy lookup table that kind of keeps track of changes that have happened to it over time.
Yeah, when you think about it, if you want to report accurately, historically, you've got to have that data in your table.
That's right.
You can't just override it with the current definition.
I can have today's definition, but that not, you know, my salespeople might have all moved to different territories, you know, from the previous year. So if I just, you know, assume that I can report based upon the current state of where my salespeople live or work, I'm making an invalid assumption.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And what we find is that source systems typically only care with the current definition. So we have to take care in our data warehouse that we actually store the historical values as well. It's very, very important in business intelligence for the accurate reporting of what has happened. So this type 1, type 2 thing could be scary.
Yeah.
All right. But to make it a little less scary, we have this slowly changing dimension transformation that through a wizard guidance, it will allow you to configure very rapidly an implementation of type 1 and 2 changes and inferred member support. Let me explain. So when you add this data flow transformation to your data flow, pretty much the wizard fires up. It says, well, where's your data coming from? Essentially, what? Not where is it coming from, because the input to the transformation is the data that you're ready to load into the dimension table. But you're not ready to load it directly. There's some logic about whether we override existing records, whether we expire and introduce new versions of records. So the first part of the wizard says, tell me which connection manager and which table from that connection manager we're loading. In essence, your dimension table. And then tell me how those records correlate. Now, your dimension table needs to store the business key or the source system's primary key, because that's how we're going to correlate those records. Next, what types of changes on what columns do you need to implement? So a change of terminology here, changing attributes really type 1, historical attributes are type 2, and there's the introduction here of a fixed attribute that shouldn't change as a type 0. So column by column, you're essentially saying that is the change type that I want supported here. Step 3, if you're going to support fixed attributes, you can choose to fail the transformation now because it's so critical. Something in the source system's changed that shouldn't have. We want to fail the package and report this. If you're managing type 1 changes, a bit of dilemma here because if your table supports type 1 and 2 at the same time and you have a type 1 that says overwrite the existing definition and there are prior versions of that, do we overwrite the prior versions as well? Well, that's completely up to you.
How many prior versions do we keep track of?
Well, if we're doing a phone number as a classic, if the phone number changes in the source system, do we need to keep a history of what their old phone number was?
Right.
Probably not. But if the salesperson changed sales territory, of course we want to keep that version. Now, if the phone number changes, do I want the old records to have the phone number changed as well? Maybe, maybe not. You can make that decision. That checkbox here is going to control that for you. And then if you choose the type 2, which is the historical attribute, you get to define how the structure of your table decides this. Now, the best approach for this, and I will say best approach, is that you're going to store a start date and end date so we know the validity of each version in that table. So pretty much you choose the second option, and then you designate which columns are the start date and end date, and what value will be used to expire the old record and to kick off the new record. Now, inferred members is another topic, that what happens when a fact package discovers during a lookup that we can't find the surrogate key for a dimension record. So what will happen then in certain situations is, if you trust the data, is that you can then infer that that member does exist. So during the fact load, you'll actually insert a dimension record. And you typically have a flag column in the table that says, this is inferred. The only thing we know about it is the key coming from the source
system. This got introduced from somewhere. I never heard about it before. Let's go back and check this thing out and make sure it's cool.
Well, for the product, we have no idea what its name, color, style is. We have nothing except its key.
Right.
Now, what we'd expect to happen if it's a legitimate record is that in a future dimension load, hopefully the next day, is that it flows through. Now, we don't want to then say, aha, this product has come in and its name has changed. It's now Fred, and it used to be null.
Right.
That's a type 2 change. No, it's not. It's an inferred member. It's really the late arriving details. Mm. So this wizard will also support that scenario, and you can configure how inferred members are identified within your table.
A lot of heavy lifting being done here by this transform.
Indeed. Yeah. So just with a couple of minutes of configuration, the output of this wizard then will construct the required data flow to implement your design. Mm. Okay, so the big bonus of this is it's fast. And if you're unfamiliar with slowly changing dimensions, but you know you have to implement it, then
don't
it's going
be scared,
to make
developers.
Life easier for you. But do take time to inspect what it develops, because it's just data flow. There's nothing magic about it. You can take a look at what it's produced, and then you could mimic that. But take care. If you're going to modify it, which you're welcome to do, and then you edit the slowly changing dimension transformation, it will keep the state of what you configured to begin with, and it will overwrite everything that you've done. So just take care with that concept. There is one other serious warning about this, because it is a very cool component, and I have used it, and it works very, very well, in particular for small data sets, and I'm saying something around 10,000 rows. The moment you get into larger data sets that I have, 50,000 or 100,000 employees or millions of products, it doesn't perform very well. Internally, it's not probably the most efficient design. So what we would suggest to you are alternatives. You can still implement that using the data flow capabilities that you have for available to you by using data correlation.
There's nothing that the slowly changing dimension transform does that you can't do yourself in your own data flow design, right?
Well, there's actually two approaches.
Yeah.
You could do it in your source system to begin with.
Right.
If you can get away with that, that's often more efficient.
Sure.
You could join between the tables in your own data
source. Sometimes you have no control over that. Right.
In fact, you may not need to use the data flow task. You could all do it through a store procedure and script, which in fact is the old way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
But challenging if your data is coming from multiple systems and you have to integrate it, one store procedure isn't going to do that.
Right.
So if you need to use data flow, the next thing is you can just use this by using merge joins and lookups. All of the basic functionality that's delivered with the product can construct the logic required to implement slowly changing dimensions. And then beyond that, there is a great solution on CodePlex that's been put up on the community site called the Kimball Method Slowly Changing Dimension component that does much and more of what the one that Integration Services delivers, but better.
And the nice point about this is it shows also the extensibility of Integration Services, where if you wanted, for example, to develop your own data transformation task, you could do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The task is the wrong word there.
Right. Yep, you're right.
He's talking control flow.
Wrong.
Don't let him
taxonomy.
Confuse you. So essentially, it's a great example of building custom components that both in control flow and data flow, developers can produce, publish, and even sell. There's an active market out there for specialized components that extend the capabilities of Integration Services. All right, so populating fact tables, very quick word on this. The major transformation that gets involved here is the lookup to efficiently look up the surrogate keys in our dimension tables. Roger's already reminded me to talk about the cache transform, which can help the lookup even perform more efficiently by pre-caching the lookup set that it requires to look up surrogate keys.
And reusing it in multiple places.
Correct. Yep. The reuse of it is also a topic. So that's the only comment we're going to say about fact tables. Typically, it's the lookup transformation that's going to be the backbone of your design. That brings us to the resources that you can explore to further understand about how to develop ETL solutions with integration services. And back to you.
Thanks a lot, Peter. That wraps up our module on integration services, and we'll see you in the next module. Thanks very much.